Accession number 18497, Reel 1.
Tony Bale, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
India.
Whereabouts?
Murray.
Which year was this?
16th of the 7th, 1930.
How did you come to be born in Murray?
Father was a regular soldier in the King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry. He was stationed there during the campaign of the Northwest Frontier, 1930-31, of which he has a medal for that campaign.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Murray?
No, I came home when I was about 3 years old. The battalion returned back to Blighty.
So where did you grow up?
In Sheffield.
Was your father a Sheffield man?
No, originally he came from Yarmouth. His family actually were fishermen. He did lose four of his brothers in a fishing accident. The boat, whatever it was, collapsed and four of his brothers died.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
That was in 1944 then? So you were in Sheffield during the war, yes?
Yes, yes.
What was it like being a schoolboy in Sheffield in the war?
I rather enjoyed it. I got a good pasting once for bringing home a live incendiary bomb that I'd found. That gave me a licking for that. We used to collect shrapnel and spent cartridge cases. And it was a little frightening, I must admit, when they bombed us. All sat on the cellar stairs with tin pots over our heads. But apart from that, it must have given me a good grounding for later on in life.
What did you have on your heads?
Saucepans.
Why?
Protection against anything falling on one's head. Yeah, remember, we were only a poor working class folk. And we sat on the cellar stairs. You appreciate that the houses in those days used to have cellars to them. And we sat on the stairs knowing full well that we'd be reasonably safe there if we had a direct hit, which one or two of the houses on our road did. And we stuck these things in our heads like a tin hat. We didn't have no choice. Our mothers did it, you see. Mum did it. She said, here, put that on your nut. And this is what we did.
What was your address during the war?
Ulverston Road.
Remember the number?
8, yeah.
Did any bombs fall in that street?
Directly opposite our house was a huge warehouse, furniture warehouse, about 400 yards away. And that was gutted during the night with incendiaries. That's where I found the incendiary bomb the following day.
Do you remember any other streets or buildings in Sheffield that were hit?
Just up the road from us on Whoopseats Road, there were two direct hits on houses there. When I walked up with my mate to have a look, saw a coffin in the centre of the road. That was the chap who had just died, unfortunately. In those days, the coffin used to come home, and it was placed in the front room. Then further up, that's where I saw the first dead. They pulled a chappie and a man and a woman and a young kiddie out of a bombed house. I got another clip there from a bobby who told us in no uncertain terms to get off home where we belonged.
Was that because you were sightseeing?
Basically, yeah. Inquisitive, I think. And during the night, we heard this plane, this whoosh of a plane, directly overhead of our house, landing into a paint factory about half a mile further away. We thought it was a Spitfire. It was They said, no, it wasn't a Spitfire. It was a single engine plane. But when we strolled down, my mate and I, to this paint factory, we were once again told to go away. But that was hushed up for some unknown reason. Nobody seemed to know anything about that.
Were you frightened during the war?
I think I was a little bit too young to be frightened. When the factory just across was burnt, I opened the door to have a look, and the heat was so intense, it actually crossed the paintwork. I got another clip for that. I used to get plenty of those when I were a nipper. I suppose I must have been frightened, yeah, but I wasn't overawed. It was part and parcel of as it was that particular time, moment in time.
What was public morale like in general during the war?
Great. Everyone seemed to get on with things. But life was different then, you see. Doors weren't locked at night. You know, you could go into your next door neighbours and have a chat, cup of tea. Everything was so, how can I describe, so amicable. Everyone was friendly towards one another. Everyone helped one another. Like if someone died, there was always someone there to what they call lay them out. One particular person would do this for streets, you know. Mm.
Did you prefer that?
Well, I was young at the time, you know. Life was life.
Was there any question of your being evacuated?
No, Mum wouldn't hear of it. Mum wouldn't hear of it.
But you could have been.
I think we could have been, yeah. Yeah, but we didn't want... Mum didn't want to know. She thought we'd... if we were going to go, we'd all go together. I suppose that's the army that did that. Because my dad was an extremely strict disciplinarian. Very, very strict indeed.
Were there any celebrations in Sheffield at the end of the war?
There was a street party that I remember, yeah. Everyone sort of got the tables out and made a huge... everyone was extremely happy that hostilities were over. Wouldn't hear those nasty drones of these German aircraft, because they had their own peculiar pitch to them, the engine sound, like a drone. Oh, we had a buzz bomb come over once. But we were, obviously everyone was thrilled to bits that we could actually put the light on and open the curtains and take that hideous masking tape off the windows. It was put there for protection. Yes, I would think to the grown-ups, it must have been an absolutely wonderful feeling. I know to us kiddies, like, to actually get the light back on again at night. Open the curtains, it was great. See the cars and trains coming down with all the lights on.
Do you remember the declaration of war in 1939?
Not vividly, no.
How did you come to be in the army yourself?
I enlisted. I signed on.
When was that?
For 5 years. 1948, I think. Or was it 47? 47, 48. I'm afraid I'm a bit vague on dates. I hope you don't find that
that's all right.
Too. But I'm very vague on dates.
Why did you want to enlist in the army?
I don't know. I think it was something inner that pushed me towards it. I'm not quite sure, but I know I always wanted to be a squaddy. I always wanted to be a squaddy. Possibly through my dad. I don't know. I just know that I wanted to be a soldier. Mm.
And was it easy to get in?
With no specific purpose in mind. Yes, quite easy. I went down to the recruiting office on Ecclesall Road in Sheffield. had my medical there, and did my initial training in the General Service Corps.
What was that like, the initial training?
It was very hard. It was Ramby Camp, and it was the middle of winter, and it was very hard.
In what sense?
It was so alien to what I'd been used to. It was a totally different environment that we were thrown into, literally. The discipline initially was rather hard, something that we'd never experienced. Well, I had, to a certain extent, through my dad. I have a record upstairs of the time spent with the various. And then, after the...
How were you treated in the basic training?
Well, I thought pretty harsh, actually. I got the fever from the jabs, initial inoculations. But I did say I was very weak. In fact, I collapsed on the parade ground through... I should have been resting. I think we had the jabs on the Friday. They had inoculations on Friday. Saturday we were supposed to have a day off. But for some unknown reason, they insisted on giving us some drill. And I was very poorly. In fact, I was a little depressed after that. But I got over it and we carried on with the training.
So how did you come to be in the King's Own Shropshire Light Infantry?
Well, we went from... Can I carry on?
Yes.
We went from Ramby Camp, which I'd done what they call heavy infantry drill, which is shoulder arms and all that stuff, down to the regiment of my choice that I enlisted for, which was the King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry. And I went down to Farnborough, to their training depot down there, and I had to start all over again to learn the light infantry drill, which, as you probably know, is entirely different to heavy infantry drill. I did my initial training at Ramby, then I went down, as I just said, down to Farnborough. I passed out down at Farnborough and went to holding company at Borden to await joining the battalion, which at that particular time was in Malaya, sorting these terrorist chappies out. I was looking forward to that very, very much. Gung-ho and all that jazz. But the King Shropshire Light Infantry had been given the singular honour of guarding Buckingham Palace, doing public duties, and they were under strength. So the odds and sods that were down at Borden waiting to join the regiments were sent up to Wrexham for training to be training for the public duties, which I suppose must have been an honour to the Shropshires to be given the chance to do this particular duty. There we did some training under the RSM, Regimental Sergeant Major Knight, Rocky Knight, who was fantastic. He was, I can't describe him, but he was very, very strict, but oh, what a drill instructor. I used to like drill, actually. I rather took a shine to drill. I enjoyed it. I really did enjoy it.
Why was that? Why did you enjoy drill?
I don't know. It was just that I enjoyed being on a parade ground, and I really did enjoy drill. I did. It was... Oh. I used to love it. We went to London, did the public duties there, also at the Tower of London, Bank of England, St James's Palace. I got a wig in, actually, at the Tower of London. I decided to join the Bugle Platoon. They were asking for volunteers to join the Bugle Platoon. I was in A Company at that particular time. We'd done quite a few guards. And actually, I got quite proficient at bugling. Why, I don't know, but I did. And we had to sound retreat in the Tower of London. It's still done today. Summertime, people throng round you. You wonder, you know, they wonder what you're doing. Then at night time, you sound last post. Well, the first time I sounded last post, in the Tower of London, the echoes hit the walls and came back, and it was a little confusing. So I sounded it towards Tower Bridge. And the governor at that time, I think it was somebody, Lascelles, I think, got one arm. He gave me a right wigging. Said, why on earth did you sound towards the tower? So I explained to him, you know, about the echo. That didn't go down very well with him, so he gave me quite a wigging for that. I also heard... am I rambling on?
No, that's
fine. I also heard horses' hooves and chains during the night whilst I was on guard, while I was duty bugler. That was a bit unnerving. On going out, of course, nothing was there. Nobody had seen anything, but I distinctly heard horses' hooves and chains. Accoutrements, I suppose, of the horses. One or two of the chaps that guarded on the wharf side near the bloody tower, they had one or two experiences which they couldn't explain, which unnerved them. But overall, I enjoyed the guards down there. We moved from there to... Sorry?
Why was Lascelles so upset that you sounded last post towards Tower Bridge?
I don't know. They said it was tradition to sound towards I think it was where the warders used to keep, I'm not sure. Like a quadrangle at top of these stairs where Anne Boleyn's supposed to have had her head chopped off. And you stood at the top of the stairs and you sounded towards the bloody tower. But at night, the sound was so intense, it came back at you, you go da down, it comes straight back at you, da down, and it sort of put you off pitch a bit. Yeah. I mastered it at the finish, obviously, like I couldn't get another wigging from him, because he was most upset, bless him. Don't know why, but he was most upset. And he was about 6'13", you know, massive. Looked down a little Anthony and said, we went from there to Windsor. I did guard at Windsor Castle. I enjoyed that as well. That was quite a bit of fun up there.
So how did you come to get the posting to Korea?
Well, the battalion went from Windsor. We went to Hong Kong. I was in Hong Kong a couple of years.
What was that like?
Well, we was up in the New Territories. We weren't actually in Hong Kong. We were in the New Territories. And at that particular time, it was extremely barren, bleak. Initially, we were under canvas at a camp called Sekong, S-E-K-K-O-N-G, Sekong. We did a lot of training in the hills, which... later on equipped us for Korea, although we weren't to know this at the time. We did quite a lot of training up in the hills, quite a lot. One little incident, I don't know whether it's worth recording or not, one of our chaps fell into a cesspit. The Chinese, I don't know whether you're aware of this, but the Chinese use human waste for the rice, the paddy fields, let down with water, which they stored this in the corner of a field. One of our chaps, it forms a crust initially, after a while, you know. And he went in it, bless him. Nobody go near him. It was funny at the time, I thought, for this poor devil. Yeah. We did one or two soundings of the retreat in Hong Kong itself. I had a very close friend, Pinky, Corporal Pinkerton. We were like brothers, we're same size, we looked the same. He thought how I thought, and I thought how he thought. And he was a real good up over Pinky. I remember once the jockey club at Hong Kong, some of a chappie of theirs, I think it was high up in the jockey club, died, and they requested if it was possible to have a couple of buglers sound Las Bolas Dunray Valley for them. So we went down to this jockey club and we met by the chief constable of the Hong Kong police, and we sounded Las Bolas Dunray Valley for them. We were very well looked after. Very well looked after.
What was life like for the soldier in Hong Kong in those days?
It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy, in as much as there were no... you had to make your own entertainment, basically. You know, way out in the territories, new territories, as I say, it was very sparse. There was nothing there, just the army camp as such. The highlight for the lads was to go down to Hong Kong on a Saturday night. They were ferried down there by three-tonner, and brought back by three-tonner, of course. And you had a reasonably good time in Hong Kong, drinking beer, etc. Usual forms of army relief.
Were you allowed to have anything to do with the women there?
Well, there was no bar as such. It was the other way around. You know, the women didn't really want much to do with the round eye. Obviously, the you know, you get these lasses anywhere you go that will look after you, but at a price. We weren't really well paid in those days, I remember. I don't think we got all that much brass.
Did you enjoy your time there?
Well, I think as a regular, you get indoctrinated into enjoying yourself wherever you went, irrespective of conditions. And it was accepted as part and parcel of your career. I went down with Tinea, which is a tropical, I don't know, you probably know, yeah, of course you would do, wouldn't you? It's a tropical disease, a microbe gets into your skin and it causes intense irritation that you must itch, you must scratch. You're not supposed to, but you tell me a person that can't stop scratching an itch, I'll show you a liar. Well, I rubbed my foot on the bed, the bunk that I was in, and it got infected, and I was sent to the field hospital initially. They filled me full of penicillin, to which I was allergic. I came up like a balloon. Then I was sent to Hong Kong, 35th hospital in Hong Kong, which, according to the lads, once you got there, it was a posting back home. But they cured me. They cured the tinea. It had spread from that foot, from my right foot to the left, you know, itchy, scratching my right foot onto my left at night.
Between your toes?
No, along the whole of the sole of the foot. Yeah, it also spread to my hands. But they cured me there and sent me back to my battalion.
How did they cure you?
They used a lotion that turned the bandages brown. It was clear like water. I don't know what they called it. It wasn't unpleasant. It just turned the bandages brown. But it got rid of the... It cured the tinea. But to this day, unfortunately, I still break out. Yeah. Every now and again. Wait, see my hands. See how red underneath the skin?
Yeah. Well,
that's it, just lying dormant, and every now and again it comes up and grabs me. Very uncomfortable.
Was there any trouble in Hong Kong whilst you were there?
No, none at all. None at all. What we used to do, one of our jobs was to stop refugees from coming in from China, sneaking in the back way into Hong Kong. We were never very successful, really, because they were so very good at getting round us. I don't think, in all honesty, that we felt that we were doing a worthwhile job. I think initially we felt sorry for the refugees, and I'm sure more than once a blind eye was turned to them coming in.
Did you do that?
Yeah, we did that, yeah. Yeah. Well, the kiddies cried sometimes. They couldn't stop them crying. We used to shout and harangue at them a bit, but the Hong Kong police were rather severe. If they caught them, you know, they immediately bundled them away. No, I don't think the lad's heart wasn't in that particular form of army life. No.
Now, how did you get the posting to Korea, please?
Well, there was a rumour going around the battalion that we were off to Malaya. It was a very strong rumour. We had all these inoculations, etc., kitted out, and the battalion formed up and we went down to the harbour, and we were put aboard the USS Montrose, Yankee welded ship, landing craft she carried. As I say, I'm not quite sure on dates. I'm pathetic on dates. I do have them if you need them, if it's imperative.
Oh, that'll be on the record, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it took about 5 days to get to Korea.
What were conditions like on the voyage?
They were pretty crowded, and they were under wartime. I don't forget the word for it. But the ship was under war footing. That's it. So everything was blacked out, you see. Mm. They used to get these orders come over the tannoy. We could never understand because Americans on the radio, on wireless, on tannoy, very, very difficult to understand what they're saying. Very difficult. The Americans couldn't get over if we sounded a retreat, which we did at night. Everyone stood rigidly to attention, and the Americans couldn't understand why we did this. Yeah. It seemed to amuse them somehow. But